Welcome to Hi Bob, the officially unofficial For All Mankind podcast on Apple TV Plus. I'm Jim.
I'm Aaron.
And we're back for the season three, let's say the first season three feedback episode. Covers everything from episode one through episode three, because that's where you guys currently are.
We have a decent amount of feedback. We had a lot more, but what was it, when I started cutting everything together, a lot of stuff that people speculated, you know, like I'd send in my message after seeing episode one, I think Danny broke his fucking back with one of those lethal space cables. I would be looking at egg on my face in the next episode, and he's just walking around, not even injured. They took that cable like a champ. So, like, a lot of stuff like that happened where people are speculating that we're building on speculation, like Danny's going to be a paraplegic, or he's going to do this, he's going to do that. So, obviously, those got cut, but we still have a fair amount of feedback, and we're going to try to get. It's kind of like a fluke why it's been so long since we got the feedback on For All Mankind, because it was like a combination of. Being gone on vacation and recording things in advance because of that. It just kind of bad timing all around. But anyway, we're here. If you'd like to send us feedback to get on future shows, fam@baldmove.com, fam@baldmove.com is where you send the D-mails, I think is what they're calling them in the show. D-mail. Mm-hmm. Digital mail. Sean Bon Jovi. Says, I was over the moon, haha, when you guys jumped on a full, it says fam, the full Alchemist Metal, the For All Mankind bandwagon last year. I can't wait to see what this season has in store for us. Just wanted to chime in with a couple of observations. Okay. It's interesting to see how they're going to continue to adapt to the aging makeup. I think Danielle looks great. Ed's is decent, but they don't look like they did a thing to Danny to age him up 10 years. It'd be interesting to see if they have this kid or Jimmy or Kelly's actors back in future seasons, as well as how they keep aging them. It's true that Danny, amongst being a psycho, a real dyed-in-the-wool psycho, has a baby face. And he looks... psycho. But that's the thing. Like, I feel like that guy could age 10 years and you wouldn't know. You know, it's like, I don't think they did much in the way of aging Ed up in the first two seasons, right? Like, sometimes you can just kind of get away with it.
I feel like you can get away with it easier in, like, from your 20s to, like, your 30s. But when you're trying to age up, like, a 17-year-old to be 27, there's, like, a body change that happens during that time. That's hard to replicate, I imagine, right? You just, like, you fill in a lot.
Yeah.
So it's like, yeah, that'd be a really hard makeup job to do, especially when the guy you've casted is already that age and you're playing him younger, and then, like, he's just supposed to look the age he is now. Yeah, it's strange.
I wonder how old the actual actor is, Casey Johnson. I wonder how old he is in real life.
I don't know.
I could probably look that up, but I'm not going to do it right now.
His mid to late 20s.
Could be.
Here's the other person that I think they're doing a really good job with is Aleta. She has, like, they're just doing it with, like, hair type stuff and clothing.
Right.
And they've done a really good job aging her up from believably into, like, her late 20s, early 30s, maybe.
I did see something because I read Alan Sepinwall's review and he's seen the whole season. I haven't seen, you know, the whole season. He does. He in his review is something he mentioned that, like, the aging makeup is a little spotty or inconsistent over the season. But I imagine it's hard. It's hard to make people that are in their 30s look like they're believably in their 50s.
Yeah.
You know, and people in their 20s look. Yeah, it's going to be interesting, especially as we continue to go on. Like, are you ready to see Joel Kinnaman as a 70-year-old?
I am. He's going to look like Clint Eastwood, right? That's just who he's going to age into.
Yeah, pretty beef jerky, pretty
gristly. He's
going to
get more and more chicken skin, and
yeah. I don't know. I guess anyone that's problematic to makeup, they do a makeup test every year, and whoever doesn't look good in the next era, that's who's going to bite it on the Mars mission.
Yeah,
Chantel Van Patine or Sateen, whatever. It's like, you're gonna have a terrible microwaving accident in Houston. It's gonna go real bad for you. Sean Bon Jovi continues, loving the alternate timeline montage. I'm really looking forward to seeing more butterfly effects. I hope that we learn about Chernobyl in this world. Given their shift to nuclear energy, fusion, fission notwithstanding, I wonder if things played out differently and why. Hoping for a great season, looking forward to the coverage. I don't remember if last year was in, because like Chernobyl happened, I think, in 86. So
well past that now.
This either because of the increase in technology and maybe increased cooperation between East and West never happened, or it happened immediately after last season. And it's just, you know, like, shit, we didn't talk about Chernobyl every fucking day in 1995 back in the day. So it could have just been one of those epoch events that got missed. I don't know.
And it's hard to do, just like it's hard to prove a negative, right? Or sometimes impossible. It's hard to tell you about an event that didn't happen, not happening. Like, what do they say? Chernobyl's right. Still humming along just right. Perfectly. Yeah. No problems whatsoever on the news.
Why would City Chernobyl still going strong in Ukraine?
Yeah.
Gregory's up next. Is I only just finished watching the preview pod or listening to the preview pod. For forgive me if you've already been informed, but here's an interview with Ron Moore that was released close to the end of last season where he says they have a potential 7-year plan for the show.
Nice.
So this was from inverse.com. This guy sat down and talked to Ronald Moore, and I got this is a direct quote. The guy asked him if there is a plan beyond season 2 and for plans for season 3, and he goes, there is such a plan. There's originally a 7-year arc of structure that we pitched originally. Each season would go roughly 10 years into the future, so you catch up to the modern day and go a little bit into the future. That would have been like season 6 would be roughly 2020 to 2020s, and then you'd have one more season kind of beyond. That said, of course, these things are changeable and organic. We approach each season fresh, even though we have a big framework of what next season is supposed to be. While we always start at the beginning and say, okay, this is what we talked about 2 years ago. Let's make sure this still holds up. Is this still where we want to go? So you could come to a point where you decide to end the show at a certain point, or you can decide that the show is going gangbusters and you want to go past the end point. Everything's still on the table. But the plan was always to go into the future and catch up and see where the world we live in today would look like. How would it be different in this timeline? I think that's a fascinating roadmap. In this interview, they were also talking about the fact that Moore, I'm not sure if he got out of a Sony deal, but he has been signed to a massive Disney deal. And there was hints of the fact that this would kind of divide his attention. And he, at the time of this interview, is saying he's fully involved in season 3. I wonder if that will continue to be the case. And I wonder if Moore does get shifted more to the Disney side, if the storytelling will suffer.
Or the storytelling on the Disney side will improve. Maybe it's, yeah, a double-edged sword. Yeah, no, I really like the way Ron Moore tells a story. Liked his storytelling through Battlestar Galactica and Star Trek and all those things. I don't know. I mean, I've seen writers' rooms lose their creative inspiration. I mean, or their creative godfather, let's say, like Vince Gilligan kind of left Better Call Saul, and that show's chugging right along as what it was when he was there. So,
but he's second in command, took, you know, Peter, right, what's his name?
Yeah, Peter Gould. So
Gould.
So I'm hoping that there's someone in the writer's room there who takes that mantle from Ron Moore and can keep, you know, the tone and feel of For All Mankind, because I'm really loving it.
Yeah, I agree. I don't, like I said, I've seen shows that lose their showrunner early and it falls apart. Thinking like American Gods especially is the one that jumps out at me. I think Daredevil suffered from that a little bit too. I think that's the same guy. I think American Gods and
he only likes
and
the Daredevil things.
Yeah, he only does. It's like, I got the first season out. You guys got it. You know, just keep painting in the lines. But I don't know. Because like the other thing is like, we do put a premium on showrunners, but the reality is any show, especially one that's already established, is going to be a lot about the writer's room and that kind of pool of talent, putting their stuff together. It's nice to have a unified person on top, but yeah, we'll see how it goes. I would love to see 7 seasons of this. That's the other thing is like, will Apple, I'm not sure, Because Apple's so new, Apple Plus, I don't know whether they would be like the Netflix type that just like cut and run at the first sign of ratings drop, or they're going to be more like the HBO where it's like, well, this has maybe a small and dwindling but still passionate audience and we owe them a conclusion to something. Because, oh my God, if this gets expanded, like in at the end of season 4 or 5, I'm going to be wroth.
Yeah, no, it'd suck. I'm really loving the idea of getting a little bit past our current day. I mean, we're about to be past our current day in this season, right? If they land on Mars, like boots on Mars, that's past our current day tech. So like,
oh yeah, you're
in another 40 years, you're talking about interstellar stuff pretty much, right? Like,
well, I mean, you're definitely got they talk about the moons of Jupiter and Saturn.
Sure. You got so Venus, there's that.
I imagine there's like there might be a gold rush in the asteroid belt. That would be kind of interesting. Like all the and now private space flight, you've got like wildcatters from Russia and China and the United States trying out there. And like, you know, maybe there's actual space force trying to who knows how the fuck things could go. But that's where I'm thinking, like you'd have a season with the asteroid belt, a season with the moons of Jupiter and Saturn. And then, yeah, maybe. God, can you imagine like a 2030s or they were trying to send an interstellar mission? That just doesn't. It seems like you have to get a lot of sci-fi. I mean, yeah.
But a generation ship is one of those concepts that's been around in sci-fi long enough that you could see them exploring that, right?
Especially at an accelerated rate of development. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It'll be interesting to see what For All Mankind has. And hopefully they'll get to tell us the whole story. Mm-hmm. Matt in Sacramento would like us to consider this as his humble application to be the officially unofficial pharmacist for Bald Moon. We don't have one of those.
No.
So
we could probably use
until
one.
Another pharmacist rises to do battle, then you're it, Matt. During the podcast for the first season, episode 3, Aaron speculated Ed has diabetes due to his use of some unknown injectable medication to his buttocks. However, I don't think this is the case. Insulin needs to be injected into the subcutaneous tissue and is usually done in the abdomen or upper arms. Though it can be injected into the buttocks, it's not usually done due to inconvenience. Is it inconvenient to shoot your butt? I guess you have to get your butt out. I don't know.
For one, yeah.
Yeah, like you can just roll up your shit and put it in your belly fat or like pinch your up. I guess, yeah, I can see. Yeah, we'll accept. We'll accept your professional judgment on that. Although the needle that Ed is using in this scene is much larger than an insulin needle, and he was injecting it into his gluteal muscle, which leads me to believe there's more likely to be a testosterone supplement he's using. This makes sense if you consider that he's getting up there in age and maybe in need of extra help to keep up the younger astronauts in the program. I also think this could set up
jogging, right? I didn't see anybody else jogging.
I also think this could be set up an interesting storyline if this is in fact testosterone that he is using and leads to some emotional instability that could arise during an intense situation, say as commander of the mission to Mars. Oh boy, we already know that Danny's all sex nuts, and now we got Ed pushing T. I don't know, I mean, this is an explosive combination.
Yeah, you've got Danny who just naturally produces extra levels of testosterone, I'm sure.
And I'm kind of surprised because
injecting it.
I think we've seen him inject 2 butt shots. I'm kind of surprised that they haven't specified what the hell it is. Because the other thing is like, no offense to the professional pharmacists out there, but like it would be the first time that a show got the wrong length of needle and they're trying to imply one thing and they did the other. Although I just feel like,
oh yeah,
there's probably a diabetic on staff somewhere for All Mankind. So like that's kind of mistake doesn't happen as often. But I don't know. I'm not opposed to the testosterone theory.
My favorite thing on television with needles is when they have the needle that's like 3 inches long and they're clearly trying to like draw blood or something. And they just put the fucking thing all the way in their arm.
Yeah. Right? Just to put it to the stopper. It's like through the other side. And it's someone like on Alison Brie and it's like a 3-inch needle and her arms are 1.5 inches in diameter. It's like, where are you putting all this, dude?
Yeah.
Yeah. That's pretty crazy.
Here's what's new in premium content for our club members.
Executive producers have a chance to exercise their rights under the Patreon pact we've made by voting for the next pulp movie that Jim and I will be covering. If you're one of the elite few backers at the executive producer level, don't miss your chance to influence us. Hurry over to patreon.com/baldmove and vote in the latest movie poll before it closes on Wednesday morning.
And for all other club members, we've got an all-new episode of Lunch with Jim and Aaron this Friday afternoon. Catch the live stream at 1 p.m. to interact with us and your fellow munchers over on Patreon, or you can wait for the podcast to drop later that day.
If you want even more Bald Move in your life, head over to support.baldmove.com to find out how you can get tons of bonus audio and video content, plus ad-free feeds.
We try to make it super easy to support making podcasts at Bald Move. Just join the club.
But some people aren't the joining type, or maybe they're already in the club but want to add a little bit of gratuity for an especially great season of coverage, or for a podcast that really spoke to them, or gave them that bit of support in a tough time.
For these, and for whatever other reason you might have, our tip jar is always open. Head over to support.baldmove.com and click the donate option to say, hey, keep doing what you're doing. We appreciate it.
Once again, check out support.baldmove.com for all the great ways to help me and Jim keep making the podcast you love.
All right, let's move on to other feedback business. Steve says, I remember reading about this at the time. He linked to me an article about Jonathan Pollard. Looks like an actual, instead of alternative history to me, maybe included to show possible consequences of Margot's activities. Let me explain. In the first episode, in that montage, they talked about Iessa, Dev Iessa's partner. I think his name was Jonathan Hilliard, who was like his fusion reactor partner. And then they also mentioned this guy that got caught up in spying. Apparently, I heard Jonathan Pollard, and because I don't have subtitles with the screeners, I heard Hilliard. So there is no relation between the person that Dev develops his fusion technology and the Russian spy. This Jonathan Pollard is a real life person who sold state secrets to the nation of Israel, who is an ally of the United States. And he got put in prison from 1987 to 2015. And I think it's like there's a lot of stuff here, because like, we don't really, because it is a plea deal, it never went to trial, we don't really know the full scope of what he stole and what he gave to the Israelis and what other countries he might have sold it to and something like that. But it just goes to show you that, like, if you can do this kind of hard time in a federal penitentiary for selling secrets to an ally, what the fuck are you going to get if they find out you've been giving all of our national defense space secrets to the Russians?
Yeah.
I think Steve's got the right of it here. This is just a show for people who maybe live through that era, paying attention, that Margot could be in some real trouble.
Sure.
So thank you for pointing that out to us, Steve. Sid is next. He says, the first question I had was, when Danny walked out on the thruster, did he walk on the wrong side of the connecting portion of the ring? It looked like he was walking on the side where he could see the booster from the side, and gravity would only be generated on the side opposite of the burn, right? This took me out of scene because I'm pretty sure he could have been ripped him off, though I could be incorrect. I think if I understand what you're saying that the thrust is going this way and that he would feel the gravity should be coming from the opposite direction of that. But any first year physicist can tell you that rotational frames of reference are a fucking bitch. You've got pseudo forces, real forces. And I think you're right that Danny would feel a little side slipping because of the acceleration that the station is, but like the predominant force is going to be the one flinging him off.
Yeah,
that's going to be because that the other's a slow. I mean, look how long it took that to spin the station from 1G up to 3. It took, what, 30, 40 minutes? We don't even really know. It could have taken an hour. Mm-hmm. That's going to be so much more subtle than the 3Gs trying to fling you off of this. You might be getting a 0.01G of acceleration going in the one direction, but you're feeling those full 3Gs centripetally or centrifugally. I'm not sure which is the real force there, but that's my reading on it. What is that?
Yeah, no, that sounds right to me.
The second question I think you have the right of, he says, would Danny's climb have gotten easier and easier as he climbed higher and higher? Not sure this would function like a centrifuge, but I work at a lab, and if you move samples to the center, the rotor needs to spin faster to generate the same G-forces. No, you're literally every step of the rung higher would get a little bit. Now, of course, the station's also accelerating, but I would think he's climbing faster than that. So, like, by the time you're halfway up, you're experiencing probably half the G's, maybe even less. I'm not sure if there's a square inverse rule or something.
And you eventually get to zero in dead center.
Yeah, at the hub, there's like no, there's at the very center of the hub anyway, there's going to be zero gravity. Keenan from Dallas, Fort Worth. That doesn't narrow it down. That's half of North America, I think.
I want to see the episode where somebody gets stuck at the very dead center of that hub. Like, if they accidentally step into the dead center with no momentum.
I hear that's a prank and or challenge that they do on the IS, the International Space Station, that they put you in, like, the dead zone of one of the larger rooms, and then you have to kind of, like, by swimming and flapping and try to get to where you can free yourself.
It sounds like fun.
It's kind of like duct taping someone to a wall. Like, you just, like, a bunch of astronauts bum rush you and take you to the center of a model, like a hab, and be like, all right, have fun getting out.
Yeah.
Anyway, Keenan from Dallas Fort Worth area says, longtime listener, first time feedback given. Love hearing it. Been with you guys since the OG Walking Dead days and look forward to watching shows like The Expanse just so I can hear your breakdown. Well, thank you very much.
Nice.
My wife and I were right there with you on waiting for the slow, dirty dance stare right into Karen's eyes from Danny. The guilt she's going to feel after this possible or his possible injury and loss of Sam will drive them closer. Gross. Fortunately, we dodged the injury. Mm-hmm. Also, he says the Medusa cables did not bother me too much until you guys pointed it out. If the lines were pressurized instead of anchors, I could believe a little bit more. But as they stand, you guys seem to be totally right. That's an interesting point. If these were pressurized like fuel hoses, I would expect a little bit more like wiggle room, like a runaway garden hose, you know, like a fire hose. They didn't appear to be that way, but
I think they were just structural support, right?
I think so. It felt to me like these were designed to kind of like as a lightweight way to resist the forces the station's going to feel trying to fling it apart. These are like, you know, tension lines to relieve that pressure. We did have a couple people that had some problems with our physics take on this. First up is Blake. He says one possible explanation for the cable madness that we saw was it wasn't just one cable, but there was successive different cables snapping, and it just chronicling the destruction of each as they disconnected.
Okay,
it's plausible. All
within range of that one side of the station.
That's the thing, like the establishing shot shows how many cables we have to deal with, and like there was only the one quad that was really affected.
Yeah.
If they were breaking over all over the station, then yeah, and each one snaps is doing, but like I didn't think they were telling that story.
The
ones
on the opposite side of the station would immediately fling away from you, right? They wouldn't They wouldn't threaten to come your direction. So it'd be like the cable immediately on your side and then maybe a couple around it when they snap might come swinging at you, but like
and it would get there would be some like flat flailing until it gets equilibrium. So Dennis has a different take. So sorry guys, but the cable won't swing like you think it will, not at first. You mentioned the garden hose, but you're swinging the garden hose from a vertex. I'm not sure what that means. The cable's attached to the end of so you're talking about swinging it from the middle. The cable's attached to the end of the ring and will lash about for some time before the rotational forces affect it since there's no air friction or gravity. Also, unless there's a weight on the end of the cable, it won't point out like the astronaut on a tether. Think of it more as a big ribbon on a flywheel. Is the show completely accurate? Absolutely not, but it's not as wrong as you might think it might be. I'm tempted to do a TikTok of me with like some kind of like thing that I'm spinning with various things at the end of it to see exactly what would happen.
Yeah.
I still think the amount of flailing that these cables would do on busting would be on the order of seconds and not like over several minutes like they were, especially when you're talking about getting to 3G. That's a lot of force on those cables. And even if... Mm-hmm. And I don't know if I buy the ribbon theory because we're talking about pretty thick steel cables, which are not that crazy flexible to begin with.
I mean, the thing convincing to me there is the weight distribution. Maybe like it not being distributed all toward the end is going to make a difference, but
Yeah, and it's accelerating. So there could be, like, if the cable's waving in certain ways, that it's, like, getting more energy put into those oscillations.
I don't know.
Maybe. I don't know either. I don't know. That's the thing. It's like, even if I did the thing that really stopped me on going out in my backyard and doing this was like, the first objection would be, well, that's not in a vacuum.
Right.
And you're already in a gravity well. Yeah.
It's coming from two different, vectors. It's not good. So
I need Phil Plate from Bad Astronomy.
Yes.
Or like maybe Dustin from Smarter Every Day to do a big full scale investigation. Mythbusters. We need Mythbusters to come back and do it for all mankind. Yes.
Right.
Yes. Spin this fucker. Get this thing spinning.
Spin.
Break a cable. Yeah, what would you call the ISS? Spin the football field? Like that's not a thing designed to spin at all. Anyway, I'm going to put Cablegate behind us because the science thus far in a series other than that has been stellar and superb. Marcy says, what led you to believe that Karen and Sam got married? Had they been married, wouldn't they have been sleeping in the same bed in Polaris? The opening scene had Sam calling Karen on the phone as they were both on Polaris. She's not wearing a wedding ring. I think they're just business partners.
Oh, okay.
Patriarchy? I think might be why I just was like, well, there's a man and woman together.
Yeah, maybe.
And surely they're not business partners. I mean, what the what? No, I think you might have caught me slacking there. I made an assumption that Karen, one of those prototypical 1950s housewives, would just shack up with the guy after she got divorced from her longstanding. But no, I think you're right. I went back and there were no wedding rings.
I assumed too much.
The reaction since has not been one that's been mourning a life partner. It's been someone that's mourning a friend and a partner, but I think you guys are right. I don't think the Sam and Karen were ever married. So apologies for that faux pas.
Who cares?
Crush him. Crush him in that elevator. Also on the back of Margot's neck, there's a yellow sticky on the door frame that appears to say tagged, a reminder to fix her jacket so the tag isn't showing. I think that's what that is. I talked about the patch on the back of her neck. Might be. I didn't go back to check that to see what it was. But the other thing is, like, we see early copies that sometimes do and sometimes don't mark the unfinished nature of stuff. So it could have been a makeup test or something that they need to see. Yeah, I don't know. But I'm pretty sure they didn't mean to have like some giant. At this point, three episodes in, it's not like she's got some kind of cancer treatment or whatever. That was what I was worried about. Like there's something wrong, you know?
Nah.
Mr. Josh from Dayton said, did anyone catch a glimpse of Margot's slim fast can top? They're the old Peel style and not the conventional pop top style. Maybe it means nothing, but it's clearly a deliberate choice. Any thoughts on why? My two cents is the pop top style was invented in Dayton, Ohio by local inventor Ermal Fraze in the early 60s. His machine shop's customers included lots of aerospace clients, including NASA's most most machine shops. Our Air Force Base is a big time feeder into the local economy. My guess is that it's a sly nod to the nation's focus being on the space race. And from that, other breakthroughs took a back seat. Huh. The nation's preoccupation of space delays the release of the pop top. It's
not all positive.
I tried to find out if I could see if Slim Fast was a holdout in the pop top thing, or like, I don't even know what the fuck they use now. Slim Fast, I think, are just like those weird plastic paper cartons with a screw off top now.
Yeah, everybody's gone to plastic.
But, you know, like, that's the thing is, like, if you see, like, old beer cans and stuff, they don't look like the ones we had today. They're much more cylindrical, right. And they have these, like, peel-open things rather than the thing. Mm-hmm. But I don't know when Slim Fast, so it could be that they're just being period accurate because that's what they looked like in 92, or it could be that they are implying something subtle about some of the nuts and bolts technology staying the same in favor of, like, advancement of other things. I don't know.
I think Yoko Ono killed the inventor of the pop top in lieu of driving a wedge between the Beatles and John Lennon and that whole assassination.
She couldn't prevent the Beatles reunion in the 90s, so right. She took to thwarting minor inventors of aluminum can technology. Okay, moving on to Tommy O. Was the purpose of the whole Karen and Danny relationship to set up some scenario where Danny has to decide whether or not to let Ed die on Mars? If so, I'll retroactively hate that plot between Karen and Danny. Are you not caught up with us? You're retroactively hate. Are you a Karen Danny stan? Darren? Canny? You need to get active. You need to stop this retroactive and get active on the hate. As far as I know, there hasn't been a smoking crater with Ed's name on it yet. But yeah, go ahead and I encourage you to fire those retro boosters and catch up to the rest of us. I don't know. Like that's the thing. It's like there's no way for Danny to redeem himself or Karen for that matter. This is just bad. They doubled down on it. Anything that happens as a result of it, I'm going to probably find distasteful. My boy, Ed's his favorite character, and he loathes this Danny Karen shit. Sure. I don't even know what he would do if Danny winds up getting Ed killed.
Let Ed die. Yeah. I mean, it's clearly there to create drama between the three of them, right? And I think that's going to work out pretty well. But as far as letting Ed die, that seems a bridge too far. They could flirt with that idea, but then ultimately...
They could flirt with that idea.
Yeah.
Karen could flirt with her with an underage kid.
14-year-old.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah, but you shouldn't... No, I don't want to, because I know Danny was an adult, and that makes it...
Right.
Slightly less icky. A little bit. But then again, it's like Karen picking up some rando, horny 20-year-old, guy in Annapolis is one thing, but it's the history. It's the history there. That's yikes. A little yikesy. Tommy said, you guys were also wondering what the purpose of Danny's brother Jimmy will be. Since we know the Russians are trying to gain assets within NASA, could Jimmy be a way for them to exploit Danny after it's announced that Danny will be on the mission? Interesting. We already have, of course, the big brouhaha with Margot, but maybe that's the sideshow to take us off the our eye off the Jimmy ball.
Yeah, I feel like the Russians aren't going to put all their eggs into one Margot-shaped basket, right?
It'd be fools for them to do so.
Yeah, especially when it takes 7 years for her to hold the hand of the guy she's supposed to be sleeping with to make her into a sleeper agent. I don't know, man. I think they would do well to create new avenues into NASA.
Yeah, or they could do something where, like, maybe their access to Margot gets cut off for some reason. She's able to extricate from herself, and now they're looking for some other in. But the other thing is, like, even if you flip Danny, like, flipping an astronaut is a lot less. I mean, God, getting Margot, the director of NASA.
Right.
What a fucking intelligence coup.
Yeah.
Like, all the Dannys and Jimmys in the world won't add back up to that. But, yeah. Damn it, Margot! You should have let Sergey die. He's dead anyway. You think they're gonna? Yeah,
we'll see what happens. Intelligence coup that I could see that being unbelievable unless they do it just right. And I feel like they did do it just right.
They did do it just right.
Having her be who she is and this seven-year buildup. If they had flipped her in a week, I would have been like, bullshit. What are you doing?
Right.
But they slow played it.
Yeah, it seems like that's how those intelligence coups go, that you carefully construct a snare, a trap for these people. And then, you know, when they're already through 3 feet over the line where they could turn back and get it, you spring it on them. Mm-hmm. And it takes time, obviously, to do that. Jesse says, to your point about the government adding a lot of red tape to Helios, this is some speculation I thought about, like what they do, some dirty tricks they could play. I bet Ellen is going to be elected president. Because she's Republican and therefore anti-regulation, which I think was mentioned in her interview with Bragg, she's going to implement policies that would directly benefit Helios, easily helping them to overcome NASA and the race to Mars. Mm. Or am I forgetting about her being close to Margot? I also don't remember if Ed or Molly knew about Margot's secret phone calls to Sergey. I could see them or someone else with that knowledge leaking that info and really messing up Margot's vision for NASA and hamstring their attempt to thwart Helios. After episode 2, I really hope Margot gets her comeuppance. Any thoughts on this? Well, we know at the end of season 3, we find out that Ellen is the president.
And that Helios is on the... a little bit of a contentious relationship between Margo and Ellen when they were both at NASA, right? Or when she was working with the DOD or whoever it was.
Yeah. Because she had a little bit more pull, a little more suck in that arena.
Yeah. So there was a little tension there.
I think the thing about, like, I don't think these are secret phone calls to Sergey. What they're doing, like the passing the information through, presumably this record deal, I don't know if we'll get more information about that, is the problematic, because like they're both the heads of their respective space department. There's several joint missions. They're sharing it'd be entirely natural and appropriate for them to have regular contact and communication.
So I don't think it's secret. I mean, some of them are happening from payphones.
Well, that's the record swapping aspect of it that might be. And but there again, like, you know, I would feel like Margo would have to be a person of interest for that to blow up in her face, because if I've learned anything from watching The Wire, it's like until they get you on that wire, like, you know. And I think that like the show would surely have shown like a government issued face man tailing her.
Yeah.
And taking, you know, like you'd have seen evidence that the Russians know about it, of course, and they've got the compromise ready to go. But I don't think the FBI does. So what do you think about this? What do you think about this red tape? Because I thought that was a cool idea. That it doesn't look like it's done anything to keep Helios from going to space this time. But I wonder if it's going to be something in later episodes this season or future seasons where, you know, NASA and the federal government with a regulatory capacity tries to use that to rein in the civilian space force.
It's possible. I didn't think of it from the opposite perspective, where like you might have some contentious relationships between the president and the head of NASA, and maybe that goes wrong.
Get into pissing matches, yeah.
And they use it to like tear NASA down and support the private space travel, but I could see it going either way, yeah.
Angrid is up and says, I was just listening to the first episode of Hi Bob, so I apologize if someone else has already sent you feedback on this, but in case no one did, I have to give you this piece of trivia from watching the 1983 movie The Right Stuff last weekend, which is that Dennis Quaid plays Gordo Cooper in the movie, the astronaut who Gordo Stevens is based on. So in a sense, Dennis Quaid has already played Gordo. Incidentally, in the 1983 movie, Gordo's wife Trudy is played by the actress who went on to play Leslie Knope's mom in Parks and Rec. I did not know that. And of course, Dennis Quaid and Meg Ryan were real life married during the 90s. That's interesting. That's pretty. I wonder if The Right Stuff existed in this world. Because like the history of space travel completely changed from between when Tom Wolfe wrote that book and the movie is based on. And this was like, yeah.
And didn't Meg Ryan play Tracy in the movie Love in the Sky?
Yeah, that's what she's pointing out. The irony that like Dennis Quaid in our universe already played the guy who Gordo is based on. So
yeah, and Tracy was played by Meg Ryan in the show. And yeah,
I think that's some funny gags. They're in that interview that we mentioned at the start of the podcast, the one that was on Inverse. There's a whole bunch of things where like Ron Moore is kind of realizing, like the guy asked him, like, are you Ron Moore in this alternate universe? Are you beginning to write TNG in this era? And like Ron Moore's like, that's actually kind of fun. I haven't thought about myself in this world, but like clearly they're having, they talked about a lot about them having fun with ideas of like, well, how the subtle pop, like it's not just all the big nation state stuff. It's like the Beatles getting back together and, you know, the fads and the fashions and what's delayed. Like he pointed out that in his mind that Star Trek didn't get canceled because people's interest in space only increased. Paramount went on with their Phase 2 Next Generation project in the late 70s. The motion picture never got made. And after the run of Phase 2, The Next Generation, they just started on Wrath of Khan. Oh, and it came out a year later.
Is he which writing I guess Voyager? Is that what you're trying to tell me?
And I guess it's all supported in the text. Like there's like references to like the people make reference to Wrath of Khan, but it came out the wrong year. So he's got this like, at least on a Star Trek side, it feels like he's mapped out culturally where that is because he's got a personal interest in it. So I thought that was kind of cute in that interview. Anyway, thanks for pointing that out, Angrid. And we're going to move on to Evan, longtime listener, billion time writer. Love this Bald Move podcast like all the rest. Well, thank you, Evan. Appreciate that. I had some thoughts on the North Korean missile activity in episode one of the season. I was active duty in the Air Force for 8 years, and while not an expert, I know a thing or two about ICBMs and space launch vehicles. I thought it was really odd that the show simply states, well, North Korea is no longer focusing on threatening the rest of the world. They're just all about space now. This struck me because the majority of technology and equipment and material that can support space launches can also support ballistic missiles. A coworker once told me the only difference between ICBMs, intercontinental ballistic missiles, and space launch vehicles is their trajectory and the letters in their acronym. I mean, that was what the space race was all about. Initially, was about the United States and Soviets being like, we can lob a nuke at you and there's nothing you can do to stop us. And every step in the, I think, was it the, is Gemini? No, Gemini, it was Apollo. No, Apollo. What was the fucking first mission? It wasn't Gemini. Which, when we've played, God damn it, we tried to recreate this in the first time we played.
Yeah, we were trying to attack Perth, right? Shit, I can't remember the name of it.
I cannot believe I can't remember the Greek god reference to whatever the first Capricorn. I don't know. Fuck it. Whatever. That one. That was just essentially proving the concept of nuking each other, but with a peaceful kind of veneer on it. And not Mercury. It's a Mercury program.
Mercury, okay. Yeah.
Thank God. Anyway, they continue. In fact, North Korea previously has stated that their space launch was for peaceful purposes, while South Korea accused them of testing ICBMs. Part of me thinks the writers just wants a country that would be believably irresponsible with the space activities, and I think North Korea fits that bill. But another odd thing is both Russia and China have tested anti-satellite missiles that have caused huge international uproar at the time over the space debris that these tests created. I have heard that every time someone tests these satellite destruction abilities, it creates like 10,000 high-speed shrapnel that NASA and everybody's got to track to keep it from blowing their shit up. Why not use either Russia or China, since they've both done this purposefully instead of North Korean accident? Could North Korea cause further headaches for the countries on the moon currently? It seems to be that they are continuing to mention North Korea and these news snippets that are in the background. And I have no idea why, but I have a feeling that they're setting them up to be some kind of rogue state that the main players have to contend with in maybe not this season, but next season and the seasons to come.
Yeah. I do wonder, are they like saving China for something else? You know, cause like, that would be a natural one to add in.
It could also be that the Ron Moore doesn't want to unnecessarily piss off Russians and Chinese that might be interested in watching the show. So North Korea does not watch. I can't imagine they let any American television in North Korea. So
right.
It could be just as something like that, you know? But I don't know. I don't know. I feel like they got plans for North Korea. I'm not sure what, and I'm not sure why. Corey says, hey guys, first off, I have to say I 100% agree with Aaron regarding the Karen Danny storylines and both of you regarding the way Margo handled the Ed situation and Ed handling his disappointment towards Danielle. Let's push all of our internet points in the center of the table. Despite this being a milk run to Mars for Ed and Helios, I bet Ed's leadership is going to overcome a problem. And more importantly, I think he's going to die, probably being the first person to die on Mars. Secondly, I don't think Danny will be going to Mars, but instead will have a drunken rampage, will end up having dire consequences, possibly a death for himself and or Karen. We know that Danny's going to Mars as of the end of episode 3. We're not sure if he's going to get there. What do you think? There's been a fixation of Ed dying.
Yeah.
Do you think Ed dies this season?
I don't want to see it, but he does a very dangerous job. You know, I feel like it's getting less dangerous every time, though. Like a mission to Mars is really no different than landing on the moon. It's just farther away. Right. So like, I mean, it's really like the concepts have been hammered out. The spacecraft has been tested. It's just a matter of getting there and landing. So I feel like Ed's all right. Ed's going to make it. But I don't know. We'll have to see how it plays out. Anything could happen.
I've often wondered like what they would do with like in this era of spaceflight with like a coronal mass ejection. Like if that thing happened, because I remember that was something that like that was in Robert Zubrin's book, and he's like, well, you could build like there could be a the crew's water tank at the center, and you could make a hollow so like all six crewmen could get into that ball and like hide behind a meter or two of water. And it was still kind of like sketchy whether they'd survive. It's kind of like just like, well, it's kind of like building a building in California. Like, it, you know, Yellowstone could go up and knock everything down on the West Coast. But are you going to stop building because of that? It's like there's a one in a thousand chance that all the astronauts would get their shit fried because the sun has a hissy fit. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. We'll see. We'll see. We got you for all the internet points on Ed's death.
I wonder if they'll do anything like that, because they've already kind of done stuff like that, right? With the solar flare that
on the moon.
Got, what's her name? Molly. Yeah.
Yeah. Cataractor. I wonder if that Dutch guy that was out on the, was exposed on the moon for even longer than her.
The guy she saved?
Yeah.
Because
he was
dead.
Kind of more like, yeah, he might be.
He was
might
exposed be. For a while. Yeah.
He was. Molly's too mean to die.
Commission podcasts are an awesome feature here at Bald Move that allows you, the individual listener, to decide what we talk about for a single podcast.
The community loves it because it often leads to fun, fan-favorite films and TV shows that we've overlooked getting the coverage they deserve.
And we love it because we're constantly exposed to great stuff that's not even on our radar.
The way it works is simple. You go to support.baldmove.com and you click on commissions. Then you pay the flat rate for the commission and tell us what two-ish hours of content you'd like us to make podcasts on.
Then we'll contact you for details, advanced feedback, and any dedications you'd like to make.
Then we watch the thing, discuss the thing, turn it into a podcast, and pump it right into your ears.
We get consistently great feedback on how much our commissioners love their podcast, and they make great gifts for the dedicated Bald Move fan in your life.
And who knows, that dedicated fan could even be you. Treat yourself. Check out support.baldmove.com for more info. Since the dawn of time, we've been putting clothes on our back that identify us with our people, our group, our tribe.
And while Bald Move might be one of the smallest, weirdest tribes out there, transcending all concepts of border, class, culture, and creed, we still have respect for the old ways.
At support.baldmove.com, you can get t-shirts, hats, mugs, and more. We have something for every one of our podcasts, or just wear the four pips of the Bald Move logo with pride.
Bald Move merch beats running around naked, and they make a great gift for the Bald Move fan in your life. Join our tribe! Head over to support.baldmove.com and click on merch to start shopping. You've been listening to quite a few Bald Move podcasts now, but you're not in the club? Whoo boy, you are missing out.
Not only are all of our premium club podcast feeds completely ad-free, but we have lots of other great content exclusively for people in the club.
There's a weekly lunch with Jim and Aaron where we chat with fans about anything and everything from TV and films, food, fun, life advice, and more.
But there's also Off the Clock, our premium podcast where we talk about all the shows we don't have time for on our public feeds.
Plus, you get access to our full spoiler-filled first-run movie reviews of our newly released films.
Don't forget Instant Take and Talk podcast, where we give our hot takes and discuss television shows with our fans live and immediately after the episode airs.
With mega shows like House of the Dragon coming this summer, we're going to have lots to talk about.
Not to mention access to our fun and friendly community of club members, with exclusive Discord channels and a dedicated forum. It's one of the best places on the internet to hang out and chat about pop culture.
Bottom line, you're helping two regular type guys in the Midwest make the content you like to listen to, which some would say is rewarding to itself.
Help keep the lights on and the bits flowing at Bald Move.
And get some awesome content for yourself. Head to support.baldmove.com to join the club today.
Danielle says, I just want to do a quick write-in regarding what happened on season 3, episode 2, For All Mankind, when Margo overturned Molly's decision of choosing Ed as the mission commander over Danielle, as well as creating a committee that would choose the astronauts for future missions. got a couple pushbacks on this. This was the one that was like the most detailed and representative. I totally get where you're coming from in thinking that Ed was mistreated and that Margo undermined agency and her position with her decision. It's definitely not a situation that was handled well. However, I do think something like the committee is the first way to increase diversity of underrepresented people in the workplace. When hiring, or in Molly's case, choosing astronauts for missions, is left to a single person, you're automatically at the whims of that person's biases. Furthermore, it seemed like Molly was choosing Ed based on her experience and what she thought a mission commander should be, and was also falling victim to affinity bias, where she's choosing a person most like herself. Not to mention the unconscious bias that Molly might also hold against Danielle regarding her race and gender. While having decisions made by a committee doesn't completely remove bias and discrimination from the picture, it all allows a candidate to be evaluated by multiple people, which can lead to a more objective rating. Having a standardized rubric to evaluate candidates and then compare them against each other is one way to improve this further. At my current company, all hiring is done through 2-panel interviews with a rubric score. Candidates can have large discrepancies between the 2 scores from each interview, and are given another look and potentially even a 3rd interview. Not saying it's a perfect system, but it does seem a lot more fair than a single person making all those decisions. Again, while I agree that Margo handled the situation poorly, I do wonder if Danielle would have come out on top had a selection committee been in charge of choosing the mission commander in the first place, and that decision wouldn't have been a bad thing. One thing I tried to make clear on the podcast is, like, I thought the decision was extremely debatable. I didn't think that there was a, like, objectively correct choice. Do you go with someone who's more of a risk taker and someone who can think more on their feet? Do you go with someone who's more by the book and cautious? Which of the but also has more like post settler skills? Or do you go with a guy that maybe gets you there on the planet and can't grow potatoes? I don't know. Like it's a judgment call, right? And I think you're right. Like everything you say is right about the, you know, the biases and how it's unfair to minorities and all that kind of thing. But I think in this case, we're talking about selecting people who are going on very dangerous missions and have to bear the risks disproportionately in a very small group of people. Like, how many astronauts does NASA have in this time era? A few hundred at most. If you have a committee, I think the majority of those committee have to be astronauts. Because like the whole the this goes back to when the white coat lab coat dudes burnt like fricasseed 3 astronauts on a launch pad because of just getting obsessively wonked about, you know, if we put pure oxygen in the cabins, we don't have to pressurize it, but like 1 or 2 bars instead of 15. And if we strip all the insulation off the wires, we can save this much weight. And they made an astronaut barbecue because they got lost in their parameters, their mission, and lost sight of the men in this era, women. They're going into space and bearing all these risks. So it'd be like imagine if all the astronauts were black and the committee was just nothing but white folk. OK, that's a problem there. There's a problem between the experiences and the burdens and everything. And so I think that if Margo felt really strong about this committee and they wanted a clear path through the astronauts, she should have taken that stuff into consideration. Like a preponderance of them should have been astronauts. Mm-hmm. And if she felt this strong about the decision, she shed this in place before this mission that Molly, by the power divested into her, had the sole discretion on making mission commander. Like I see everything that people are saying about like there's two sides to it, because there is. Like, I think Danielle would have been a fantastic mission commander, probably better than Ed, especially with Ed and his head up his ass attitude towards Danny. But that doesn't make what Margo did right.
No. No, it's not necessarily about the approach itself. It's about the way it was forced upon Molly. That was the offensive part of it.
Yeah. And it's like, you know, it's one of those things where like I start caring a lot more about representation and diversity and that kind of stuff when things become bigger and more mature. And I think that in, you know, something like a space age where you got a very small number of group, and they have to have complete trust with each other's lives. Like, their opinions should matter a hell of a lot more than the administrators. But yeah, as like, you know, when, and as this matures and you get like, I think that's the thing. And if we didn't say it on the podcast, I apologize. I think that this kind of move is inevitable one as this matures from wildcatting, pioneering, frontier busting type of stuff to making it commercialized and safe and repeatable. Like that is a move that we'll have to make. It's just, why did it have to happen now? And if it did, why did you allow yourself to get politically outmaneuvered by fucking Molly?
Sure.
You know, so that's my opinion. Caitlin says, hey guys, I'm on the road for work about half the year, and this one tip that definitely helped me was, if you're going to be in a motel for more than one night, unpack everything. Living out of suitcases is harder on you than you think. So if I were there for a weekend event, I'd do the same thing. Another pro unpacker.
That's crazy.
I agree. If it's an overnight, because I did an overnight stay up on the north shores of Lake Erie this last weekend, did not unpack my suitcase, just lived out of it. Mm-hmm. But if I'm going to be there for more than one night, yeah, I'm putting that shit in the drawers.
More than one night. Wow. No, weekend trips don't get unpacked. Weekend trips, everything stays in the suitcase as much as possible. Week-long trips, now you're talking.
Well, I'm lucky that the luggage selection committee is headed by Caitlin, an experienced person who's on the road for half a year, not some Jim Jones hasn't left his house in 3 years kind of dandy.
Maverick.
Doesn't know anything about unpacking and packing. I'm a luggage
maverick. I can live out of a suitcase for decades at a time.
You probably could.
Probably could, yeah.
Out-of-state boogers. Hi, Bob. Hi, Bob, out-of-state boogers. Or hi, Boog. Slingshot maneuvers is to space exploration movies as a timely gear shift up and down is to racing movies. Change my view.
I won't, because it's correct.
I mean, you're not wrong. They're dramatic. They make you go vroom. They are cinematic as hell. Yeah. No, I don't think there's anything wrong with that.
No.
Although I will say it's a lot harder to do just a purely cinematic like gear shift in space. Like, you know, the options for slingshots are not, it's not as common as just, you know, working a gear box, but, you're right on. Rob, maybe it's the result of watching and reading too much of The Expanse, but whenever I see they showed people on the Polaris and they were in civilian clothes with civilian accessories, I found this impractical. That they figure out a new way to launch people into space that didn't include massive G's, because otherwise it strikes me that everyone's dangly earrings would have been ripped clean out of their ear holes. Also, Ed's chair is just a chair with a 5-point harness on the Phoenix. It looks like a projectile waiting to happen if they need to initiate a burn. Did you notice this, or am I quibbling a bit too much?
I mean, I don't wear my seatbelt when I'm just sitting in my car in park waiting for somebody to like come out of a store or something. I presume they wouldn't wear their earrings during launch.
Yeah. I assume Ed's. Yeah, that's why I feel like that there was probably like, hey, put all loose, like going on a roller coaster. Jesus Christ. I went on fucking Steel Vengeance at Cedar Point. You had to take your eyeglasses off unless you had a strap on. Like, they didn't give a shit. Hearing aids. I saw people getting they're making them take their hearing aids off. Like if it was not secured to your body with a goddamn strap, pockets, cargo zip pockets, they don't give a shit. Put it all in the locker. I feel like it'd be something like that. It's like to get you all, because they had to wear a spacesuit too, right?
Oh, for the ascent.
Yeah, at some point you'd have to wear a spacesuit. I feel like that they probably have like a little baggie that they, and you put all your like heavy earrings and all that kind of stuff, and then it's given to you at the, but like you just don't see that stuff. Now, Ed's chair, like, I don't see any problem with that. Like, if it's bolted down.
What's the complaint about Ed's chair?
Ed's chair, that it's like it could be a projectile if they needed to initiate a burn. Like, I don't think Ed's chair is literally unsecured. It's not like got like rollers like an office chair. I think it's bolted to the ground. So I don't see any problem with that.
I mean, there's also the idea that like in space flight, you don't really do a lot of unexpected maneuvers.
True.
Like, there's nothing out there, man. Like, once you get out of orbit, there's literally nothing out there. There's no reason to ever do a burn that isn't scheduled years in advance, right? So, yeah. Like, you're not having to dodge shit that's coming at you,
right?
At 26,000 miles an hour or something.
It's not like a Belter Raider is going to come out with their mass drivers blaring, and you're going to have to take evasive maneuvers and all that kind of stuff. And so, also, like
having chairs that aren't bolted down. is not even a problem if you can store them for a scheduled burn, right?
Yeah. And the Phoenix also is not intended to lift off from a body. It's going to stay in low Earth or Mars right. orbit and in deep space. So, like, it's not like it's going to have massive G's when it's taking off. I imagine it's much less than a G of thrust that they're going, that they took off under. I imagine. But, because it's like, you know, a long-term trip, I think it'd be a slow and steady push. But then again, at some point, they turn their engines off no matter what. I don't know.
Let me ask you this. Up on the Hotel Polaris, did they have like a hotel happy hour or something where they'd stop the spin and just let everybody float in zero G? Because if not, what the fuck are they doing?
Oh, yeah, that would right? be. Or they need to have like expanded rooms at the hub so people can experience zero G. Or zero G suite.
A zero G suite.
Because you know people going to want a zero G fuck.
Four times the price. Of course. That's the number one reason to go to space.
Yeah. I'd say in the top three.
For sure.
That's a big missed
exploration,
opportunity.
There's domination of a new frontier, and there's SpaceX. Mm-hmm. Those are the three reasons. Space,
there you go. Massive platinum asteroids.
Uh-huh.
Helium 3 fucking in space. I think we're ready to move on to Craig T for the finale. It says, I love the show and the season so far, but one thing that keeps taking me out of the moment is the amount of green screen scenes, especially when our core cast are in populated areas. I know it's COVID related and it's a very clever way to combat this. And for the most part, it works. But what lets it down is the lighting on the foreground compared to the green screen background. Surely there must be some software to color match these scenes to match and make it that much more real. I've noticed this in so many shows and movies now, especially the MCU. Am I missing something? Because it seems like an easy fix to me. What you're missing is like the budget and where it goes. Like, it's not super hard, but color correcting everything and matching it, I think a lot of times it gets to good enough. And like, we're going to have a very complicated zero G shot this year, and we need to save the budget for that. I will say this. I have noticed that cheapness in some of the Disney Plus crap. I haven't noticed it so much this show. Like, I notice it when things are composited, like when they're doing the historical footage and all that kind of things. And but I haven't noticed a lot of the green screen COVID stuff. I know it's there, but it hasn't jumped out to me. Maybe it's because I this is one of my favorite shows, and my barrier for suspension of disbelief being broken is pretty high, but I haven't noticed it. If it's bothering you, I feel bad. Need to more color correction, apparently. That's going to be it for our feedback for All Mankind. We'll try to get back a little bit quicker on the next one. We won't leave you hanging for three episodes, but it's largely up to y'all. FAM at baldmove.com. If we get a smattering feedback, we'll probably start appending them to the end of the episodes. But we've, like I said, had a whole hour of feedback for the first three episodes. It's a lot. FAM at baldmove.com. If you want to stuff our D-bags or D-mail bags or D-mail servers to capacity. I'm going to move on to F-mail just to be safe. FAM at
that'll help
at baldmove.com.
Stuff our bags full.
we will see you tomorrow, probably, because Apple's been releasing these things early. We're going to see about releasing or advancing our release schedule to keep up with them. But we will have a fresh new episode for you and a fresh new podcast episode for you to cover or for you to enjoy within the next 24 hours. Thank you for writing in. Thank you for listening. We'll see you on the next one. Until then, I'm Aaron.
And I'm Jim.
Later.